Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2011. Lecture 22, delivered on November 30, 2011. The title of this lecture is Working Capital Management Policy.
Today, Working Capital Management Policy. This is an important topic. In one sense, this is something that I might want to dismiss. Well, you're going to learn about this maybe some other class, but not really. It's getting into some more sophisticated territory and possibly correcting some misimpression you might have gotten from another class, an earlier business class somewhere. Sometimes I have students who have learned an old rule: you should match current liabilities with current assets and long-term liabilities with long-term assets. I don't know if that's ever taught anymore or not. Were you told that somewhere before? It's sort of like matching of maturities and all that. It's not true. That's actually very not true in general. And it's more not true depending upon if you have certain kinds of working capital management policies. First of all, working capital. That's the difference between your current assets and your current liabilities. So I could say, okay, here's your current assets right here. Current assets. And here are your long-term assets. And I'm not making any big distinction between the financial concepts and more accounting concepts, but think of this more in accounting terms. And then you have your current liabilities. And then you have your long-term liabilities. And down here somewhere, one would hope that you have a little bit left over that is your, more or less, your owner's equity. So that these two actually add up, these two columns add up. Current assets plus long-term assets is your total assets. And that should equal your total liabilities plus your owner's equity. And those two should equal each other. Like that. Okay. Now notice that I drew the current assets a little bit larger column than the current liabilities, which would indicate that in this company, which is somewhat desirable, your current assets exceed your current liabilities, and now the ratio of those two would be your current ratio. Now the difference between these two right here, see this difference right in there? That's working capital. That how much your current assets exceed your current liabilities. We refer to that as working capital. In other words, how much liquid asset you have in excess of your short-term liabilities. But again, though, there is this sentiment that has been conveyed for a very long time that you should match your current assets to your current liabilities, and your long-term assets should be covered by your long-term liabilities. Essentially, maturity matching, as it were. That's not really true in practice. Let me get a little more detailed with this. Current assets actually can be divided into two types. Here's your current assets. I'm going to draw that block again. There are two animals in this category. There are these permanent current assets. And then there is this ebb and flow of temporary current assets. What do I mean by that? Here's one. Have you ever urinated? Okay, good. Okay. You're looking at, what the hell does that have to do with it? Okay, there are times when you have a lot of temporary liquidity. After a beer party. After an exam where you got pissed off. Now, there are times when you are full. And then you are not full after you have gone to a nearby wall on your way home. Real finance for real people. But that's more or less what we mean. There's a lot of you that's going to be there, whether I see you at night or in the day, whether I see you on the weekend or during the weekday. A lot of you is going to be there, but there's going to be some of you that will be fuller sometimes and emptier at other times, okay? And moving away from that scatological example, think about it this way. Companies have a certain amount of inventory where you just draw the line. We are not going to go below this inventory. You're going to learn some formulas in operations management, how you calculate when it's time to reorder and all of that kind of stuff, depending upon your inventory management policies. But sometimes you're going to get your order in and there's going to be a lot of inventory. And then there are going to be times when you're down to that place where we need to reorder now because we don't want to go below this certain amount of inventory. So you could say, all right, there is going to be a permanent value of inventory, not the same actual goods. You're going to cycle the goods. You don't want the same goods sitting there. But there's always going to be a permanent value of inventory, and then there's going to be this ebb and flow on top of it, depending upon what time of the year, what time of day, even possibly. You're going to see a temporary component that will go up and down, but then this rock-solid base. Similarly with cash itself. You're going to have this rule, all right, we do not want to go below this amount of cash in our money market account. That's it. We will have that much. And then some days you'll have a lot in there, and then some days you'll have not as much in there on top of that. But there will be this permanent amount. It's still a current asset, but there will be a part of it at any given time, a part of your value that will stay there. In terms of your inventory, cash, and even in terms of receivables. I'll tell you a story about this, and it's a kind of a subtle story. I hope you see the point. A couple of years ago, I had a debit card, and that was what I had left for the month, was I had $55 in this debit card. Okay, so I figured I'd pull into a gas station, one of those self-serve gas stations, and I put the debit card in, and I put $5 worth of gas in my car, put the nozzle back, drove off happily with my $5 worth of gas, figured that could get me to the place where I could get some noms and then go home. I went to get my noms at Walmart, and my card wouldn't work, $20 worth. I thought, wait a minute, I know I checked my balance before I left. I spent $5 on gas. I have to have enough. I went back home, and my debit card had been hit for $50 from the gas station. Well, I just went back over there, raised hell. I said, we don't know. The guy was not what you would call the brightest light bulb on the street. I don't know what, you have to call this number. Well, I tried to call. No one would talk to me, and it occurred to me what they were doing. No matter how much gas you were going to get, they were going to hit your debit card for as much as they could. And then they were going to hold it for a period of days. In this case, they held it for 5 days. And then they released the $50 there was $5 left. So they hit my card for $50. They released $45 of it 5 days later. You see what they were doing? And I worked it out, how many customers at gas stations like this chain would have around the country, how many people by industry estimates use debit cards every day. They were maintaining a base on any given day of close to $10 million. But of course, they were always in any given day refunding people's money. But at the same time, they were always having new money that they were locking in for 5 days coming in. So there was essentially this substrate base of money that was always there, that wasn't theirs, but they were paying no interest on that. It was like an interest-free borrowing from their customers that to this day goes on at many gas stations around the country. You watch what they do with your debit card. They'll take out more if you put it in the slot. They'll take out more than you actually buy in gas, and you won't see that money show back up for a few days. That's that idea that even though there's this flow going through, they're refunding money every day from customers 5 days ago, there's always money coming in, the money that they're locking in for 5 days. So in other words, even though there would be a flow in permanent current assets, there is a reservoir that is always there. Just like in a lake, there's always going to be a flow out of the lake from rivers that are draining it, but there's always going to be water coming into the lake from rain and rivers that flow into it. So this permanent current assets isn't like stuff that's always going to be there, the same stuff. It's just that there is this base that is always going to park there no matter what. So we've got these temporary current assets that are on top of this amount of value that is in constant flow, but it always has a specific amount of money in there. Companies are actually very interested in that because it's not easy. You can't just calculate it. You have to think about it for a while and work on it. But anyway, here we go. Now, most companies, if they're conservative, the way they'll approach working capital management is like this. They'll take their long-term liabilities and they'll finance all of the long-term assets and as much as they can of the permanent current assets because they're almost like a long-term asset. They're almost like a long-term asset. Again, this would be the conservative approach. Long-term liabilities finance all long-term assets plus all or almost all permanent current assets. That would be conservative. So we're going to issue bonds, and those bonds, let's say we issue like 20. For God's sake, kill it. Kill it with fire. What the hell was I before that? It's okay. That's conservative. Now, there's another way. There are two other ways. There is this very aggressive way. Understand what's going on here. Is that long-term debt is cheaper, generally speaking, than short-term debt. And so the long-term debt, you're essentially getting a bargain on your long-term, on your financing, not just for your long-term assets, but you're also getting a low interest rate that is going to be used to finance your permanent current assets to the extent possible. And then you reserve current liabilities pretty much to finance the temporary current assets in this model, the conservative model. Your current liabilities really are committed only to handling that ebb and flow, paying for the new inventory that comes in, that kind of stuff, making sure that we have enough cash in the bank. Okay, we really need to have some cash in the account, so let's issue some commercial paper so that we have cash if we need it. The current our cash reserves have gone down pretty severely. So in this conservative approach, your current liabilities are reserved for just this up and down ebb and flow of your temporary current assets. Now let's go to the other side, a very aggressive, riskier side. In the aggressive approach to working capital management, you take your long-term liabilities and you finance basically as much as you can of your assets. Long-term finances, short assets and long assets. What that would do is that would reduce the need for current liabilities. That would reduce the need for current liabilities. But you are at this disadvantage to the extent that you're financing with a 30-year bond, something that might be used up in 2 weeks, a month. You're financing with a 30-year, albeit cheap debt instrument, something that you inventory that you're going to sell off the shelf within the next by the Christmas holiday rush when that's over. That's your problem, is that, good God, you're on the line for 30 years for something that that you didn't use for 30 years. It's sort of like borrowing on, taking a second mortgage out so that you can buy your food for the day. It's not a good idea. It's aggressive, but there is an advantage to it. Cheap debt. Cheap. You're financing stuff with cheap debt. So, you got a choice. You got a credit card, which would technically, if you pay it off properly, which most people don't, you got a credit card that runs, let's say, 18.99% APR. Okay? You're hungry. You could use that credit card to go buy your meal at McDonald's, or you could take out a second mortgage on your house for 6.99% and buy that same meal. Now you're thinking to yourself, well, this is a stupid example. But that's what aggressive does. That's exactly the whole idea of aggressive. You're actually, well, it's hell, it's cheaper. So let's do it that way. Whether or not it's rational is another matter. It's cheaper. So the next time you need money, you got a credit card, and you're hungry, don't use a credit card. If you're an aggressive working capital management guru, just go out and get a second mortgage on your home or something like that. That's what you should do. Or some other long-term commitment. Now, are there companies that actually do the aggressive approach? Yes. I thought it was just something theoretical. I've run into a couple of companies. I've studied their financials, how they're working. There's no question they're aggressive. They get their money cheap because they're credit worthy. And so they're out there. They are, at least technically in terms of numbers, there's money being borrowed long term. There is nothing long term that they're financing. They have to be financing, obviously, permanent, but they're borrowing more than their permanent assets. They're financing temporary their temporaries with the long term, too. How do I know that? Because I look at their current liabilities, and their current liabilities are very low. Their current ratios are very high. Huge number of current assets to current liabilities. There's no question that in the real world, there are companies doing this aggressive approach simply because long-term debt is so damn cheap They'll use it to finance quick, short-term, temporary assets. Basically, borrow 30 years, 20 years to finance inventory for the Christmas season. Go figure. I don't know. Now, there's an intermediate approach that seems to be pretty darn popular these days. And it gets kind of nuanced from what I talked to a guy who's with a company that takes this moderate approach. And he tried to explain the logic of it to me. The book gives you sort of a window on it too. But it's really a lot to do with the company itself, how it plays the moderate approach. Basically, it works like this. In the moderate approach, your long-term liabilities finance all of your long-term assets. They finance all of your permanent current assets. And then they finance some of the temporary. Now, the sum. Is there a logic to what they finance? Yes. This manager I talked to, he said, all right, if we've got temporary assets, we see two different kinds of temporary assets. We see temporary assets that are just cash and marketable securities. That's totally temporary. We would never borrow long-term just so we had plenty of cash in the bank. We would never do that. But we see inventory, some of our inventory, like our heavy equipment that doesn't sell for like 6 months, maybe a year it'll sit out there. We would finance that long term because it isn't really the same temporary as some of our much more liquid assets. So in that particular moderate approach policy that's being done in that company, they finance the long-term assets with the long-term liabilities. They finance permanent current assets with the long-term liabilities. And then they finance the parts of the current assets that are down below cash and marketable securities. They finance those with the long-term liabilities. That's the moderate approach in their view. I don't think that's the way it's done from what I've looked at other companies. The moderate would be a little bit more moderate than that. From what I'm looking at in financials of other companies and from what they write, a more reasonable moderate approach would be like this. Okay, long-term liabilities finance long-term assets. Long-term liabilities finance all permanent assets. And long-term liabilities finance those temporary current assets that seem to have longer life cycles. Like, for example, if you look at accounts receivable, if you look at it carefully, there are actually, in many companies, and this is actually, I've read companies talking about this, it's kind of a something that was popular to do. You look at the accounts receivable, and you'll see the accounts receivable going up and down in a kind of an odd fashion sometimes. So essentially, there is this permanent amount of the accounts receivable right here that's always going to be there, a certain amount of value in accounts receivable. Let's say $100,000. We're always going to have at least $100,000 in accounts receivable. Okay, but if you look more closely, there is another, which I saw in one trade journal, was described as semi-permanent. It actually keeps showing up cyclically. It doesn't ever just completely, sometimes it vanishes completely. But for the most part, usually, that is always there. So even though it's not a permanent accounts receivable, it's not just up and down, there, gone. It keeps recurring. And so in the moderate approach that it seems to be more popular, long-term assets, they of course finance long-term liabilities, they finance permanent current assets. And then they finance this piece right here that they have calculated just seems to keep showing up. It's not always there. But let's say that your total accounts receivable, there's always $100,000 there. But on any given monthly cycle, you'd notice that there's usually $140,000. Not always. Sometimes it goes down to that base, 100. But more often than you might expect, there's this pad that's almost always there. So in this moderate approach that is truly moderate, they figure out what this part of their current assets is that's going to be there most of the time, and they finance that with long-term liabilities. And why do they do this again? Because long-term debt is cheaper than short-term debt. And so essentially, this is part of maximizing the value of the firm by minimizing the cost of the components that you have to finance. And as a result of that, this whole idea, well, current assets must match current liabilities, current long-term assets match long-term liabilities, that's completely wrong. Almost no company in the world does that. Most companies, actually, I shouldn't say that. Honestly, I'd say older companies, they stick to the conservative approach. They just do it that way. Among companies that are a little bit younger, higher betas maybe, that kind of stuff, you'll see one variation or another on the moderate approach. High-risk companies, young upstarts, they're the ones who do that aggressive approach. They just borrow the hell out of the long-term markets, and then they finance the hell out of everything, and then hope to God that they live long enough to pay off their bonds when face values do. That's how they do it. Highly risky, very aggressive, but at least they don't have to pay the bill for their inventory at the end of the month. You see, that's the nice thing about the aggressive approach. You borrow on a 30-year bond to finance your inventory to get through the Christmas season. You don't have to pay that debt back when the Christmas season's over. That's a very nice thing if Christmas season sucked for you. It's also, so you would survive a hit during any given cycle when you were supposed to sell a lot of stuff. That's the upside of it. The downside of it is, of course, though, that if you really do suck as a company, you're never going to earn enough money to pay off your bonds. And then remember what I told you the bondholders will do to you? Unlike the equity holders, the bondholders will shoot your dog, they will sell your Bible on Craigslist, and they will make your mother wear furry costumes that please them. So you don't want to piss off the long-term bondholders. So if you're going to take the aggressive approach, be prepared to say, "Hi, Mom, are you Mrs. Fox today?" That's all I have for you. I thank you.